I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Sandspence Radio, Australia's dumbest podcast network.
Hello and welcome to Dear Harry / Spock, a podcast where comedians read out their original fan fiction for your listening pleasure. My name is Ellen Waddell. Hello. If you're listening and you're not sure what fanfiction is, it's basically where people make up a story about stuff that already exists. And it can be about anything or anyone. I recently discovered a whole corner of the internet dedicated to fanfiction about the game Pong. Most of the stories tend to focus on the existential dread of the paddles and the fascist regime they laboured under, but still, it was pretty wacky stuff. But now some sad news. This is the last episode of our current series. And if you have enjoyed it, please review us on iTunes. Please tell your friends about it. Please subscribe to us so we can keep coming back and making more. So this episode, our last one, is a little bit of a mixed smorgasbord of content, mostly due to the current world situation, as we've had to cancel quite a few live shows where we get many stories from. So we've got more sketches than normal and a little bit of fan fiction from me. This is a story I wanted to read out at one of our live shows, but unfortunately that's not possible, so instead I'm going to read it out to you in my living room. It's my X-Files fanfiction. When I was 14, I was absolutely obsessed with the X-Files. I loved everything about it. I loved being scared by it, I loved how Fox Mulder would mansplain everything to Stanford graduate medical doctor Dana Scully, and how despite seeing multiple paranormal things on a weekly basis, she spent roughly 5 seasons not believing in anything paranormal. Like, there could be an alien eating a beef stroganoff in a kitchen and she would still be like, nah, mate, it's probably science. That was a catchphrase. We all remember that. Nah, mate, it's probably science. Also, my parents were going through a divorce when I was 14, so it was perfect escapism for me. And I had this very specific ritual for when I watched the show. I would get several Mr. Kipling apple pies, I would put them in the microwave, and then I would eat them all whilst watching an episode. Because Mr. Kipling apple pies are like a hug for your mouth. And no one was hugging me. And then when I went to bed, I would lull myself to sleep with a fantasy about being cast as an extra in the X-Files. But in this fantasy, I would play a dead body because it was minimum effort and also I knew my acting range. During a break from filming, I would bump into David Duchovny, who played Fox Mulder, at catering. And he would see me and he'd want to date me. And even though I was 14 and he was 38, it was cool and people would be totally chill about it. So this is fanfiction about 3 things. Apple pies, the X-Files, and playing the role of a corpse. Also, there are some insider jokes in it for the hardcore X-Files fans. They're pretty nuanced. So don't feel bad if you don't get them. So please enjoy my piece of fanfiction, which I call UFO. How about UF me? Fox Spooky Mulder put his feet up on his desk and idly threw another sharpened pencil at the ceiling above him. He was bored. He hadn't had a good case in weeks. His boss, Walter Skinner, had him investigating cyber terrorism and international drug rings. Like, who gives a fuck, mate? Not him. How he longed for some paranormal cases. Paranormal like those sex-swapping Amish aliens, that carnivorous fungus, and that weird guy who produced slime out of his mouth so he could digest women's body fat. The door opened and in came Dana Scully, his cynical, god-bothering partner. "What's up, Scully?" he said, spookily. "We have a case," she replied, cynically. "Another human trafficking group that needs shutting down? Dull," said Mulder. "It's a girl," Mulder, Scully said. "She has died, in mysterious ways." Cut to the morgue. Scully pulled back the white sheet to reveal the dead body of a 14-year-old girl. Mulder gasped, sexily. "My God, that is the most beautiful dead body I've ever seen. But how did she die?" asked Mulder, quizzically. "We don't know," replied Scully. "One moment she was standing by the microwave about to tuck into a delicious Mr. Kipling apple pie." "A woman of taste," interjected Mulder, for he too knew the lore of those apple pies. Scully continued. "And the next moment, she was dead." Cut to the crime scene. Mulder stood in the masonette kitchen of the sexy dead girl's house examining the microwave. "Strange," he commented. "It stopped at 11:21. "Look, Mulder, I know what you're thinking," said Scully, "but it's just another case of girl eats pie, girl dies." "Mr. Kipling apple pies are the most delicious pies in the world," Mulder replied. "They couldn't have killed her. This goes deeper than that." "Nah, mate, it's probably science," remarked Scully. Some cocky FBI man with a face and shoes entered the room. "What's up, spooky Mulder?" he shouted. "Think this is just another case of little green men?" "Suck my dick," remarked Mulder ostentatiously, pushing the dead girl's weeping mother out the way so he could square up to this prick. "Whoa, lads, we've all had a drink," said Scully, getting between them. "Mulder, go get some air," she instructed. And with a huff, Mulder flounced outside. Mulder stood on the porch, cooling off. He could smell smoke. Cigarette smoke. And that's when he saw a mysterious figure lurking next to the house. A man smoking a cigarette. Some kind of cigarette-smoking man. "Hi, Dad," said Mulder. "What? You know about that?" said Algernon, which was the cigarette-smoking man's name, probably. "Totes," said Mulder. "I assume this isn't a social visit." "No," said Algernon, taking a deep drag on his Marlboro. "You have to drop the case, Mulder. This goes deeper than you can imagine. As deep as an apple pie filling." And with that, the cigarette-smoking man walked backwards into the shadows. "Dad? Dad, come back! Come back and play catch with me!" screamed Mulder, Freudiantly. "Who are you shouting at, Mulder?" said Scully, appearing on the porch. "No one," he replied, deep in thought. "Mulder, don't do that thing where you work out what's going on instead of telling me you just run off." But it was too late, because he had already run off. Cut to Mr. Kipling's Apple Pie Factory. Mulder entered Washington, D.C.'s largest Mr. Kipling apple pie factory. It smelt of burnt caramel and ennui. It was late and it was empty. In fact, you could say it was deserted. Lol. He headed up to Mr. Kipling's office. There were pictures on the wall of Mr. Kipling meeting various important food company figureheads. A photo of him sitting in a bar clinking whiskies with Ronald McDonald, dancing intimately at a party with the Colonel, and sharing a joke and a cigar with Marks and or Spencers. "Hello, Mulder," said a lone, deep voice, startling him out of his thoughts. He spun around, reaching for his gun. A dark figure moved out of the shadow of the doorway and into the light. It was Mr. Kipling. He stepped closer to Mulder, who steadied his gun on him. "Stay where you are, Mr. Kipling," he said. "Calm down and call me Steve," said Steve Kipling. "I just want to talk." "About what?" said Mulder, his grip tightening on his gun. "You know about the pies, don't you?" Mr. Kipling said. Mulder nodded. He did know about the pies. "I know you've been implanting government secrets in those pies, which when microwaved psychically transmit the secrets to whoever eats said pie." "Well done," said Steve. "How did you work it out?" "Dunno," said Mulder. "That pie was meant to go to the president," remarked Steve. "Instead it went to that girl." "So you took her out?" said Mulder. "Yes, but we can also bring her back. I know you've grown fond of her, so in exchange for your silence we will..." At that moment, Scully burst into the room. "Don't listen to him, Mulder," she cried, pulling out her gun. "He's a fraud." Steve Kipling laughed and got a French fancy out of his pocket and offered one to Scully. "No thanks," said Scully. "I've just brushed my teeth." Mulder pointed the gun at Scully. "Back off, Scully. I can save the girl the same way I couldn't save my sister." "Feed her seven pies," Mr. Kipling said, before vanishing in a puff of smoke. Cut to the morgue. Mulder was back at the morgue, staring at the dead girl's corpse. Scully entered the room, interrupting his sexy thoughts. "Mulder, I'm worried about you," Scully said. "No, you're weird," said Mulder. Look, Scully, I'm in love with this dead corpse. She has something about her. And I don't think she's really dead. I think she's just sleeping. Like one of those really deep sleeps you have where you wake up all groggy. But Mulder, Scully remarked. She has no pulse. But she still has a heart, Mulder said. And then he popped 7 apple pies into the morgue microwave for 2 minutes, which was enough time for them to get to the perfect temperature. Just warm enough to burn the top layer off the roof of your mouth. He lovingly inserted them into the mouth of the dead girl. For a moment, nothing happened, and he floated above himself and thought, this is a bit weird, isn't it? But at that moment, Walter Skinner burst into the morgue, gun drawn. Mulder, you have to stop this now, he said. This is a bit weird. Yes, Mulder, said Scully, get away from the dead body. Dead like my sister, said Mulder. Oh, thanks for... Before Mulder could finish, the girl began to cough. Came back to life. Everyone turned to look at her in amazement as she opened up her green eyes. She's alive, said Walter. It's a miracle. No, said Mulder. It's a pie. And then he made love to her right there and then, and Scully and Skinner clapped as he did. The end. I hope you enjoyed that bit of weirdness. I'm incredibly proud of it. Our next story is from Rob Frimston, who as a child loved the adventures of Thomas the Tank Engine. As a young boy, he always wished he could visit the island of Sodor, where all the trains lived. Thanks to the magic of this podcast, his wish has come true.
Ah, young Robert, welcome to the Sodor Railway.
Oh, wow! You're the Fat Controller!
Excuse me, young man, my name is Sir Topham Hatt.
Yeah, but like in the stories, everyone calls you the Fat Controller.
Not to my bloody face, they don't.
Well, anyway.
No, come on, who was it? I want names. Was it Gordon the Big Engine? He's a right pompous prick.
So, trains.
What? Oh, yes, I love trains. There's Thomas, Percy, Toby.
Oh, they've got such great names.
Duck, Toad, Rusty.
All those ones aren't really names as such.
Scarlowy, Reneus, Culdee.
And now you're just making up words. But still, I'm sure that all of them are really wonderful trains.
Shh. We don't use words like that here. The preferred phrase is really useful engines.
Why?
Because then their sense of self-worth is intrinsically tied to how hard they work for me.
What happens if they don't work hard enough?
Oh, well, then they get to retire.
Oh, that's nice.
Let me finish. They get to retire to a scrapyard, where they're left to rot until they're broken down for parts.
You mean you kill them?
No, lad, no. It's entirely possible that they remain alive and conscious during the process.
That's horrible.
And it's the threat of that horror that keeps the railways running. Trains.
Are all the trains boys?
No, we have female engines as well.
Well, how many?
2.
Oh.
There's Daisy, the diesel rail car. Her main personality trait is that she's stuck up. And there's Mavis, the quarry diesel. Her main personality trait is that she's stuck up. And they tell me I'm not progressive. Anyway, all the coaches are female.
Oh, yes. Like Thomas's coaches, Annie and Clarabel. Do all the coaches have names and faces and personalities?
Nah, it's pretty much just them two. The others are regular inanimate railway carriages.
Wait, who's that over there? Is that the drummer from the Beatles?
Aye, it's Ringo Starr. He's one of our many narrators.
But why is Alec Baldwin with him?
Have you seen the movie Thomas and the Magic Railroad?
No.
No, neither has anyone else. It's deeply weird.
And isn't that one of the James Bonds?
That's right, it's Pierce Brosnan. He narrated Thomas the Tank Engine at one point. I'm as baffled as you.
The Fat Controller gave Rob an incredulous look.
Not now, Ringo.
No.
No sense of timing, that lad. Hello, Sir Topham Hatt. Oh, you're bloody kidding me.
What's up?
It's Henry. He's refusing to come out of a tunnel in case the rain ruins his lovely green paint with red stripes. I've got to teach him a lesson somehow.
Well, if you talk to him and really get to the heart of what he's worried about, I'm sure you can come to
him. Brick him up.
What?
Brick him up in the tunnel and leave him there.
I'd like to go home now, please.
Oh, sorry, lad. It's a one-way trip. You're stuck here. Now go over to that sentient train, climb into its head, and pull all the levers until it does your bidding. Have a really useful day.
Thank you, Rob. You can follow Rob on Twitter at @rfrimston. And thanks to Juliet Burton for her excellent voice acting. You can follow her at Juliet Burton.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Next up, we have a sketch from Idil Sukun and Angus Dunnican. It's set in Star Trek The Next Generation universe, and some of you may remember the famed security officer Tasha Yar, who was taken from us too soon by an amorphous tar blob called Armus in the episode Skin of Evil.
Papa, Armus brought in the logs for the fire.
What a disappointing brown noser you are, Armus, my son.
Armus made our swamp hole all neat and tidy.
My farting little nincompoop.
Papa, what is the point of living when all Armus feels is pain?
My ungodly son, you may look like a seeping tar creature, but you are so much more. You are the physical manifestation of all evil, as I am and as my father was and his father before him. Also, you have the family poopy face.
All Armus thinks of is indiscriminate murder.
Now, son, that's nothing to be ashamed of. That's just a normal part of growing up as a vengeful puddle.
Armus designed a 3-piece suit made entirely of bladders.
Yes.
Armus fed a grenade to a goose.
My boy.
Armus got on to the tube without letting other passengers off first.
Oh, to be young again.
But Armus just wants to be normal, Papa.
Oh, come on, son. Come. Let's suckle on this elk.
This elk disgusts Armus. But Armus disgusts Armus most of all.
Oh, joy at last. I once, in a moment of weakness when you were very young, kissed you better when you scraped your slippery knee. Oh, how I've lived in fear that you would have grown up well-adjusted.
None of Armus's friends want to play catch with Armus anymore.
Oh, soon no one will. You will throw a ball and watch it sadly roll off into a ditch. You will buy a meal for two and watch half of it tell you to fuck off. Your plus one at a wedding will just be a jar of your own piss. My boy, my most goopy boy, you're such a mess. How I wish your mother were alive to see you. She would be so relieved. She was so ashamed at your birth that she just dried up on a windowsill.
Armus now understands where all Armus's self-hatred comes from. Armus feels Armus will not channel it well.
Son, come now, eat your elk. You'll feel even more grossly bloated.
Armus is a monster. Maybe that's all Armus can ever be.
Now you're getting it.
Who will hold Armus? Who will rock Armus to sleep at night? Who will love Armus?
Oh, nobody. Let me tell you, as your mother abandoned us, I will now abandon you. Yeah. vulnerable and defenseless. And under an eagle's nest, perhaps. Peckable and succulent, eh? I have to let you fend for yourself now.
Oh, please. Baba, do not forsake Armus.
Goodbye, Armus.
Baba!
Goodbye. Remember, you are awful. Watch out for that eagle.
What eagle?
Thank you, Idle and Angus. I don't think you will find a better sketch about transmitted trauma than that. You can follow Idle on Twitter at IdleSukan, that's IdilSukan, and Angus Duncan at Angus Duncan. So I actually co-created Dear Harry Slash Book with my younger sister Emily, and she spent her teenage years writing Harry Potter fan fiction. She was getting quite badly bullied at school, so fan fiction to her was a form of escapism. She ended up writing 100,000 words of fanfiction, and she recently went viral because of it. I had a chat with her about her experiences.
So, I think I was 11.
When the fifth Harry Potter book came out.
When the fifth Harry Potter book came out, and I was writing fanfiction around it, like 11, 12.
Yeah.
And I remember how I started, because I was doing stuff on the internet, like you do in 2002. And I don't know how, but I stumbled across some fan fiction, and I thought it was the unreleased sixth Harry Potter book.
And what happened? Do you remember anything of what happened in the Harry Potter fan fiction?
I remember it got real sexy.
Right.
And I was like, this is weird and making me feel feelings.
Inspired by these feelings, Emily decided to start writing her own Harry Potter fan fiction. She explained a bit of the plot to me.
The main one I had was that Draco Malfoy had a twin sister who came to school.
Yeah.
And that is basically the plot. And it was very common that you would have that, like a sibling would arrive, or like someone who would like challenge Harry Potter's like grandeur in school.
Yeah.
And I think like the trio or whatever hated her, and she was like a Slytherin, and she was like calling smoke ciggies and all that good stuff. She was basically Faith and Buffy.
When you were putting it online, what kind of reaction were you getting?
Oh, people loved it.
Yeah.
People loved it. Got like comments and views and stuff, and they were just like, this is amazing. I can't wait for the next chapter. I love how you write this. And I was just like, oh my God, I'm literally a genius. I can't believe I'm like, no one likes me at school. I don't understand.
When Emily was 14 years old, she discovered a little band called My Chemical Romance. And she started hanging out on a Yahoo forum called The Ultimate My Chemical Romance Site. And that's when she discovered their fan fiction thread. She knew immediately what she had to do. Emily started writing My Chemical Romance fan fiction with two girls from the forum. They all took turns to write a chapter, and in the story, each of them had a different band member as a boyfriend, documenting the innocent love between 14-year-old girls and 25-year-old rock stars. They quickly decided that Emily was the best writer in the group, and soon the responsibility fell solely on her to write all of the chapters.
Was writing basically this giant mega story that had been was written over the course of a year, and by the end of it was around over 100,000 words.
But then disaster struck. Emily got a boyfriend. She realized she would rather spend time with him than write fan fiction, as well as concentrate on her GCSEs, because in her words, French was not going well.
But yeah, I couldn't be asked to do it anymore. So I was like, all right, it's time to end the story. And I was like, I don't know where I got this stroke of genius from, a gift from the gods, potentially. Where I went, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to reset this year to 2001. And they're all in New York at art school, which is actually a thing. And I'm going to have them all die in 9/11.
Years later, this twist was stolen and used in the popular 2010 Robert Pattinson film, Remember Me, where his character dies at the end, in 9/11, and it has no relation to the plot whatsoever. Emily is considering suing. However, this story recently got her some unexpected viral fame.
I drunkenly told my friend Nathan about this at a bar once, and he's got like a fairly decent social media following, and he basically tweeted everything I just said to you, but in, you know, 108 characters, whatever, and it got like over 100,000 retweets.
Yeah. The tweet says, I'm not going to name names, but one of my friends just revealed that she wrote a My Chemical Romance fanfiction that was 100,000 words long. Then she got a boyfriend but was pressurised by the girls in the online community to finish it, so she made everyone die in 9/11. It has so far been liked 50,000 times. Nathan, the tweeter, followed up this tweet with, "This has gone too far, IMO." I recorded that with Emily in Berlin. That's where she lives. You can follow her on Twitter at @callsignEmily. Apologies for the sound. I was quite drunk when I did it, and I'm bad at life when I'm drunk. So that's it. That is the end of season one. Thank you to all our performers, sketch writers and actors. And thanks to you for listening. We will be back, I hope. And if you want to keep up to date with all news Dear Harry / Spock, then follow us on Twitter, Instagram and Facebook. It's basically / Dear Harry Spock after everything. You can also email us if you want to, I don't know, have a chat. Email us at dearharryspock@gmail.com. Goodbye for now, lovely ones. Take care of yourselves, look after each other, and have a nice cup of tea. Dear Harry / Spock was hosted by me, Ellen Waddell. You can follow me on Twitter at Ellen Starbuck. It was made to sound good by Steve Dawson, and you can follow him on Twitter at @sdawsonbross. Thank you.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.